Thank you for coming to our talk. So we want to share the experience we have working with a local nursery, kind of overcoming fusarium and also understanding where the problem comes from. So we kind of come from a quarry management background. We're water chemistry people. So the talk today mostly want to go through some water chemistry and the case study of the nursery and what we saw while we tried to, you know, understanding the better pathogens hiding and how much chlorine to use to treat them. At the same time, can the root handle the chlorine concentration? So we want to kind of compare all those studies. And then at the same time, we have a lot of experience on how to manage chlorine. In this case, we'll be using an OLP sensor, so we'll go through all that stuff. But the key finding for this study that we have done is pathogens are mostly dormant, and they're hiding in the irrigation system everywhere. So we sample many spots to look at where they're hiding. And at the same time, we look under microscope and look at the root hair tolerance, and we figure out they're pretty robust, actually. It can go up to like almost 50 ppm of chlorine, but the colony almost take up to 4,000 ppm to rupture the cell. So we're going to provide some observation on that. Just real quick summary, free chlorine, there are two types. One is hypochlorous and hypochlorite. So in this case, we prefer hypochlorous. They are 20 times more strong, but sometimes you can control them depending on pH and everything. So it's kind of hard to say, you know, what is the best, you know, how to deploy them in the field. So we try to help with our customer on doing that. And at the same time, contact time is important. So we'll just show some evidence on the contact time. And currently, free chlorine and combined chlorine are measured by predominantly this method, a colorimetric method. If you have a lab, you can use UV-Vis, a spectroscopy method. And in the field, most people will use OLP. It's a potentiometric sensors, and voltammetry, more exotic, but people use it in the field as well. So our case study is a local nursery growing gerbera, and then pretty big, 400,000 flowers, and they have been using free chlorine for some time, but they still having fusarium problem. And so we are asked to come in to help here, look at it and see what's going on. So we just share with you what we have done here. I think the main concern we have seen is they mix the chlorine with the nutrient solution. And that's something that's commonly done, but we don't think it's a very good idea to do that, and we provide two pieces of evidence why we think it's not so good. And we also look at the root hair. So we look at not just the practice, we look at the physical method of how this actually affecting the plant, and at the same time how the plant responding to free chlorine as well. So just a very quick block diagram. So this is just very classic arrangement. The plant would be in a growing medium, and then water would be dripped into it and return. Filtration, sterilizer, and then they store in a day tank, and then they mix it again with RO water, and at the same time they inject free chlorine at the spot before the nutrient solution in tank A and tank B. So this is sort of what they are doing today, and they found out wasn't very effective. And they also know they have some fusarium and pythium remnant. They're not sure it's dead or alive, but definitely it's there. So what we did, first thing we did, we go and collect water at every single spot. So, you know, that you can think of. And most important is the dripper, the emitter, and then the hose and everything. Most people ignore that. And then the bed, the trough, because the water goes through the trough as well. So we go through all that area. And so those are results that we have, sort of a very typical result that we have seen. You can see a lower left-hand corner. The dripper is full of bacterial growth and fungal growth. And at the same time, the biofilm, contrary to belief, is not as bad as we thought in terms of fungal growth. And our prejudice or our film is only growing yeast and mold, so we don't have bacteria in theory. We got antibiotics in there. And this is another test that we do. You can see the filtration system is clean, but the buildup on the trough in the lower left-hand corner is pretty, still having fungal growth there. And the drain water from the plant also full of growth. So you can tell the whole system is actually loaded with a lot of pathogen. So the question is now, you know, how to overcome that? And obviously, free chlorine is the method that we think is very effective. And we also find out that sterilization is definitely working. So it's whatever afterward, adding the fungal pathogen back into the system. Okay, so one thing that most people would think, okay, I just mix chlorine with the nutrient solution and I'm all good. And what we found out is not quite true. So this is a chloramine culture that we did. And chloramine basically is byproduct between the chlorine and then the nutrient solution. So in this case, we are going up to 150 ppm. Most of the grower are only using 3 ppm of free chlorine. But even up to 150, we are not able to actually suppress the fungal growth. So Now, one thing that we found out is mechanical filtration worked really well, but obviously it's costly, so that's something probably have to practice. But in theory, mechanical filtration actually works, as we can show here, down to 0.22 micron, which is exotic, but it does remove all the pathogen in this case. Okay, so this is a contact time study. So you can see on the upper left-hand corner, we have 40 ppm of free chlorine at 5-minute contact time, and then the lower right-hand side is the 20 ppm at 2 minutes, and the reference on the far right there. So you can see the contact time and the concentration does matter, obviously, but the question is now, how do you deliver this? Because this is not just a mix. This is actually done in the lab with pure free chlorine. So we know it's effective, but at the same time, in real life, how would you do that? That's another challenge. Okay, so now this is the question that most people don't talk about, is everybody use chlorine, everybody mix chlorine, but where do you mix them is actually very important, because chlorine actually does not stay very active for a long time, and at the same time, they are converted to chloramine very quickly. They are all kind of chloramine, and that's a byproduct management issue that, you know, we don't want to touch upon, but there's byproduct issue that sometimes EPA also will come after you on that one. So this is published by USDA, I think it's actually University of Florida, one of the lab there, that show the strength of the free chlorine versus time. So you can see under any MPK combination, the free chlorine actually disappears very quickly, within a couple of minutes. So now if your pipe is take around 5 minutes to go through the plant, you don't have much disinfection going on at all. This is sort of their test result on the chloramine and everything. And then in the field, most of us will use something called OLP sensor, oxidation reduction potential sensor, to make this measurement. And so we can see the discrimination very low. So on the DI water on the left-hand side is 650 millivolt, and then the rest of them are very similar, so even 50 to 80 millivolt is important in this case. And in our lab, we don't use just those sensors, we also use UV with spectroscopy, and this is the signature of a hypochlorite in this case, actually. And then this is pure. Now, when you mix it with a nutrient, you got to a different species. So that's important to know, that you don't just randomly mix them and you have to really know what you're doing to deploy chlorine effectively. Okay, so now we know free chlorine, you know, have some benefit. The question is now how much? So what we did is we actually grow some little seed, and then we look at the baby root, extract the root hair, and then see how the chlorine attacked them. So we'll show some just some picture here on the microscope. So on the left-hand side, normal root hair, you can see the green area, which is chlorophyll. And then on the right-hand side is a severely attacked root hair and all the things being bleached out. So that's the time that we believe we can consider the root hair being damaged and the plant will be damaged. So we are mostly interested in whatever contained within the root hair and as a gauge of whether good or bad. So this is a test for 50 ppm. And on the left-hand side, before the free chlorine attack, on the right-hand side, you see the green fuzzy stuff leaching out the root hair that we believe is being attacked already, so the chlorophyll are leaching out. And this is another picture. The cytoplasm actually kind of bleached out, not as bad, but a little bit bleaching out. So we think 50 ppm probably the limit. If you go any higher than that, it'll be very rough. So this is like 3,000 ppm. And before exposure, the root hair kind of healthy, spread out. But after 3,000 ppm, they start really shrinking and breaking. So that's what we can observe on the microscope. Okay, so now we know what the root hair can handle. The next one we want to know is how much the pathogen can handle, at what level we can kill them. So this is another test we did. We cultured some pathogen, and then those are the standard looking with the cell wall, you know, nucleus and everything. And then we attack them with chlorine. In this case, it's a 3,000 ppm chlorine, and for 3 hours. So you can see on the right-hand side, the cell are well-defined with the nucleus, cell wall, and an envelope. But on the left-hand side, you see the chlorine start going in and removing a lot of material from them. So that's one type of cell. And we do many type of pathogen that we can grow under the dish. And so that's another one. And this one is less, only 1 hour. But you can see on the right-hand side is before the chlorine. And the left-hand side, you can see a green dot getting a little bit less because the chlorine now attacking them. So those are tests that we do to try to understanding, is the chlorine really effectively doing anything, you know, to combat the pathogen in this case. Okay, so now to come down to your point of practice. So great, we understand cell root hair, how they respond to free chlorine. We understand the pathogen, how they respond to chlorine, and how much to use and everything. And we understand the challenge of mixing chlorine and nutrient water. So now, in practice, what do you do? So in the field, OLP sensor commonly used. And OLP sensor is not a very easy to use sensor, extremely user unfriendly, honestly. So most of the growers that we talk to does not know how to use them, doesn't know what they mean. This is just a very quick summary. The big challenge is OLP sensor is not a concentration sensor. It's a mostly a potency sensor. And at the same time, they have some memory problems, so kind of tougher to work with. But at the end of the day, it still can provide useful dosing control. But to do that, you need to know your dissipation model. So you need to know how much to dial in and how much to observe and maintain the level. So that's sort of what OLP would do. So our standard recommendation would be something along that line, like the nursery that we just go to. We would recommend actually dosing chlorine at different spots rather than pre-mix with the nutrient. We want to mix it with the day tank, and also we want to monitor and mix it at the dripper rather than going through the whole line and with the nutrient and everything. So that's what we thought. Okay, so that's sort of, you know, what we have done with this nursery. I want to share with you, all of you, that, you know, I experienced and everything. And is there any question for the case study that we have done? No, they're mostly using free chlorine. They also actually, we have data also on clean glow. I mean, I should say, you know, quaternary ammonia more than clean glow, and they also use CO2, which is hydrogen peroxide. So they also use both. And actually, I didn't go into detail, but they actually, their practice is they take the dripper, they pressure wash, scrub, and then soak in those fungicide, and we still have growth. So we understand it's more, that's why it's more complicated than most people think. You cannot just spray and scrub and everything, assuming everything is perfect. We discovered it's still hiding as dormant for a long time. So it's a challenging question on how to deal with this in real life. And in theory, you just throw it away and get a new one. That seems to work. Yeah.
How do you get growers to stop mixing their fertilizer and their chlorine together?
Yeah, so this is, it comes down to that. If you have a pathogen, you know, outbreak, so obviously, you know, profit is of concern. So in this case, they have a 10% reduction in productivity, so it's a big deal for them. So we show them how this, you know, that's why this study is done. Actually, this study is for them to convince them, okay, what chlorine can do for you and also what and not to do. And so in this case, they were convinced because they think we're not seeing effect after 3 years, actually, using a free chlorine generator they purchased. And after 3 years, we still have infection. So now they understand they're just not doing it right. So in this case, that's what we this is all the work to convince them, actually, to show how that works and everything.
But there's probably thousands of growers that are injecting chlorine and fertilizer at the
right
same time. It's like, to me, it's an education issue.
Yeah, I totally agree, yeah. But we also want to have some evidence base because everybody talks to a grower and say, my method works, your method works. So that's what we do, all this work. It should be really evidence-based rather than just, hey, you know, trust me. You know, so that's why I want to show how the cell being destroyed, and we can also do chloramine and everything. So it's true, it's a very difficult problem because, you know, the setup is already done. You know, they cannot rip the line out. So in this case, we have to convince them to do it, actually. But in this case, they were convinced because they are suffering a big loss. Yeah. Any other questions? Okay, thank you.